on the BetMGM Network. This is the Daily Tip. I'm Chelsea Messenger. He's Michael Jenkins. Over the next couple of segments, here's what you can expect. Of course, the NFL starts tomorrow, so we're catching you up on all of our previews in the AFC. We'll preview the AFC South, the AFC West, give you our bets for both of those divisions. Next segment, we'll go on to daily baseball bets. If you want to win some money, or hopefully win some money, tonight we've got our daily action for you planned in the majors. All right, Jenks, since we're talking about my Titans and the AFC South, I was going to ask you, do you think the AFC South is now the worst division in football? Like, for the longest time, it was the NFC South with the Panthers, the Saints, which, I don't know, are two juggernauts. Maybe the Panthers will be better this year. But the Saints are going to be an anchor, I think. But I do think the playing field has been leveled. Because the AFC South has not been great. Of course, my Titans got the first overall pick last year for a reason. So do you think the AFC South is going to reclaim the title of worst division in football this year?
God, the Saints are the big fulcrum point, right? It's the Saints. So it's close. I love that I'm having to pick a side here. Which division stinks more, the AFC South or the NFC South? I think it might be the AFC South, despite the Saints. Like, I feel like the Panthers could be better. I'm super interested to see how Bryce Young does this year, because he was actually very good at the end of last season. I feel like that's not talked about enough. Falcons should be on the come up. Bucks have won the division title three straight years. Yeah, I think it might be the AFC South. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think so, too. Like, even if you go, like, head-to-head, like, if this was, like, a golf matchup, like, your top dog, the Texans, you put them against the Bucks, they can take the Bucks. Like, the Bucks, I feel like, don't get as much hype because, obviously, you know, C.J. Stroud, when he had his freshman campaign, was really, really good as a rookie. And people don't love to give Baker Mayfield credit, but I feel like they've gone toe-to-toe against some of the best teams in the NFC. And yet people are like, well, it might be the Falcons' year. It's like, how many times do the Bucks have to prove it to you? So I feel like I'm going to take the Bucks at the top spot. The number two team, the Jags versus, I think we'll put the Falcons there. Jags versus Falcons. Who do you think has a better season?
I kind of think it might be Jacksonville. I think the Jags are going to be better than expected. I think the Jags could win the division. And maybe I'm getting caught up in the whole Liam Cohen, Trevor Lawrence connection. But everything that I've read is that Liam Cohen, since we were talking about the Bucks, remember, Baker Mayfield had a career season under Liam Cohen. And that's why he was brought into Jacksonville, right? To be this offensive mind, to bring along their franchise quarterback. And I feel like with them working together in the offseason, everything I've read makes me think that Jacksonville could actually surprise the Texans. They're plus 310 right now. And so I like the value there. Their win total is only set at 7.5. So I need to pump the brakes a little bit here. Their defense is the real issue. But I think offensively they could surprise.
Yeah. I don't know. I still feel like the Jags need to prove it to me because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like people have wanted to jump on the Trevor Lawrence bandwagon for like quite some time. Like even last year, I feel like I was one of the people who were like, ooh, Trevor Lawrence, long shot MVP, question mark. But it hasn't been like a steady progression up for Trevor Lawrence. And I understand that a lot of it has been really difficult when you have such a turnaround of head coaches, and especially when you have a terrible head coach, like at the start of your career, and Urban Meyer, who probably undid a lot of good habits that Trevor Lawrence had coming into the National Football League. But still, I feel like I kind of need to see something else from the Jags. I think it's going to be the Texans for me winning the division, even though I will say this. They do have some weaknesses, especially along the offensive line. And here's the thing. If C.J. Stroud goes down, they're not winning the division. So I think that's the biggest problem is their offensive line. Gave up the second most sacks of any offensive line last year. So I know it's not something that is talked about. But C.J. Stroud, I do think, has the better body of work, surprisingly so, even though he has only been in the NFL 2 seasons. So I think I'm still going to go with the Texans. I trust, you know, their front office a little bit more. I trust their head coach a little bit more because it is still difficult to implement your system as a rookie head coach. You know, as somebody who has just gotten to the team. So not that I'm writing off Leon Cohen. I am just saying maybe it takes a little while for the Jags to get their feet underneath them. So I still am going to go with the favorites here. I know, you know, we always see a story of a team that goes from really bad to really good. I just feel like with all of the information in front of me, I'm still going to go with the Texans. And plus, you can get them at -105, which is a pretty decent price for a division winner. Win total set at 9.5. I'm not sure if I'd touch that. It's pretty high. Do think they probably do win 10 games. But I think I'd rather bet on them to win the AFC South. Just for conversation purposes, is there a way that either the Colts or Titans contend for the AFC South, or is this a two-horse race?
Oh, I definitely think this is a two-horse race. Like, with all due respect to your Titans, this is not their year. They're rebuilding, and I think we'll see Cam Ward, like a lot of rookie quarterbacks, have an up-and-down season, and he will sort of learn along the way. I don't even know if the Colts want to win. Do you know what I mean? Like, they have some offensive tools, I guess, but Daniel Jones is a proven commodity. He's not going to jump up and surprise us and become some sort of amazing quarterback. He'll drive the car. He'll have some moments where he looks pretty good. He'll take off. He'll show those wheels, and then he'll look like Daniel Jones. So this is really just Texans-Jags. I think the ceiling is higher for the Jags than maybe the Texans, but that all depends on Trevor Lawrence. It all depends on his development. Again, under a new system, under a new head coach, under a new offensive mind. And so that's why I like the Jags more than most. But ultimately, I just don't see the Colts or Titans. I mean, hell, we've heard rumors that the Colts were going to tank for Arch Manning, which I know now people are saying, like, why would you want to do that? Did you see him at Ohio State? All fair. At the same time, I haven't seen anything from the Colts that makes me think they're all in on trying to win this season.
Well, yeah, it doesn't feel like their year at all. I don't think that they're not trying to win. If that was the case, it would still be Anthony Richardson, even though I know he's dealing with injuries. But still, I think that they will be a team that can compete with the other teams in the AFC South. Will they be competing with anybody else? Probably not. But here's the thing. All these teams have relatively easy schedules. Like, even the Texans, who did not have the first overall pick in the draft, have the 18th hardest schedule in the NFL, which, Reed, is not hard. They'll play 7 playoff teams from last year. And then if you look at the other teams in the AFC South, like the Jags are 24th, the Colts are 25th, and, of course, the Titans are not going to have a difficult schedule because they lost the most games last year. Have the 29th hardest schedule. So there will be winnable games, but the problem is these are not very good teams. So all those games are certainly losable when you are that bad. I will say, from a Titans standpoint, the bet that I will be looking at is Calvin Ridley props. One thing we have seen throughout the preseason games and even in camp is the Cam Ward Calvin Ridley connection has been fantastic. And we see this a lot with rookie quarterbacks, is that they have a guy that they like to throw to. You know, they don't go through the progressions as much and they get nervous. They're like, hey, let's depend on a veteran. And Calvin Ridley's a good veteran to depend on. Guy is super fast. I feel like people forget how good his skill set is simply because he plays in Tennessee. So I think that's a bet worth looking at. Maybe, you know, across the board in every single game is look at some of his receiving props. Even though I know the first game of the season, it will be difficult going against that Broncos secondary. And you best believe Sean Payton will probably have a very difficult game plan in store for Cam Ward. So I'm not somebody who's super high on what we should expect from Cam Ward in year one. And I feel like I need to go back to, like, the normal saying for rookie quarterbacks is that it is just really difficult to be a rookie quarterback. And I understand that we have seen some outliers like Jaden Daniels last year, CJ Stroud is a rookie campaign. But I do think people don't really have that high of expectations for Cam Ward. So I do think that's a good thing. I'm not saying there's no pressure on Cam Ward. I just do feel like this is a season where if Cam Ward is mediocre, you know, hell, that'll even be better than the quarterback play we saw last year from the Titans. So I do feel like the pressure is off a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's one of the more fascinating discussions when it comes to the NFL, because when it comes to quarterback evaluation, like, we're just all over the place. All over the place. Like, a couple factors. Number one is, especially if you're a number one overall pick or a top five pick, you have these ridiculous expectations, right? And if you don't meet them immediately, then you're a failure. Like Bryce Young, I keep going back to that. He has gone from total bust, okay? Doesn't belong in the league. He's 4 feet tall. What are we doing with this guy? He can't see over his offensive lineman to, he's okay. He's probably going to be done. And at the end of last year, it's, hey, this guy's got some experience. Maybe he turns into something. I believe at the end of last year, need to double check this, he had 10 touchdowns, 0 picks to finish the season. So people are saying, well, who is he going to be? This is year three. Another factor to take into account now is if you look at a Bo Nix or a Jaden Daniels or a Michael Penix Jr., these guys came in and looked great immediately. Why? Because they had so much college experience because of the COVID years, because of guys reclassifying. So that's going to go away. Now you're going to see guys come in less prepared than before because they had less collegiate experience. That's another thing. And then finally, quarterbacks in the NFL are just on a short leash anyway. Look at how Sam Darnold went from an absolute nobody, total bust, was in the MVP conversation last season, and then all of a sudden signs a massive deal with Seattle. Geno Smith, out of nowhere, was kind of a journeyman and then becomes a guy in Seattle, now plays for the Raiders. So that whole discussion when it comes to how a rookie quarterback is going to be, there's so many factors that go into it that you really can't just say after a handful of games how good or how bad this guy's going to be.
Yeah, and I do think being on a better team helps. Like, mm-hmm. Bo Nix going to the Broncos with a bunch of weapons around him and Sean Payton as his head coach, the quarterback whisperer, I am not saying it takes away from what he did. I am just saying it is not an apples-to-apples comparison. And, Jenks, to parlay that into our next discussion about the AFC West, oh, my goodness, the backtracking that I've seen on the narrative of Patrick Mahomes lately. I don't know if it was Colin Cowherd who said this or somebody who said, you can't deny that Patrick Mahomes, a big reason for his success is the fact that he went to the Chiefs. It's like, okay, but he's still a great quarterback. It feels right. Like people will do anything to discredit Patrick Mahomes these days. Like, I don't know if you saw the interview with Joe Montana the other day where he picked, like, his three favorite quarterbacks to, like, start a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick Mahomes wasn't one of them. It was, like, you know, Joe Burrow, which, okay, I get. It was Justin Herbert who, what has he won? Like, yeah. He's, you know, exciting to think about the potential. But I feel like it's a very similar discussion to who you think wins the AFC West. Because people have done this all the time where they want the next big thing in the AFC West. They have mm-hmm. sold us on the Broncos before. Remember when Russell Wilson, you know, came to the Broncos? Everybody said, oh, Russell yeah. Wilson's coming. They're going to be amazing because the defense has always been good. They just need an offense. What happened that year? The Chiefs won the division. And people have been trying to sell us on Justin Herbert for a while now. And listen, he has some good numbers. His mechanics are great. He looks like a prototypical Hall of Fame quarterback just because people have said this about him. He looks like he plays like Aaron Rodgers, but taller. So, like, it feels like he has all the tools. Mm-hmm. But, Jenks, I just can't pick against the Chiefs. Not until somebody dethrones them. So, once again, I am taking the Chiefs to win the AFC West. How about you?
Yeah, I would choose the Broncos over the Chargers. I go back and forth. Like, you're not going to find a more evenly matched couple of teams when it comes to the numbers, at least, right? Like the Broncos mm-hmm. and the Chargers, both plus 310 to win the AFC West. The Broncos and the Chargers both have a win total of 9.5. Like, they're very similar, not necessarily in style, but as far as talent goes, as far as coaching goes. But, yeah, it's the Chiefs until proven otherwise. I understand that they got run ruled essentially in the Super Bowl. They were awful. Patrick Mahomes looked terrible. And people are looking at that one game and finding a way to hate on him. Like, if he retired tomorrow, he'd be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. And he's not done. That's not hyperbole. He's a 2-time MVP. He's a 3-time Super Bowl champion and a 3-time Super Bowl MVP. That's Hall of Fame stuff right there. Full stop. So he had one bad game. People want to hate on him. It is the Chiefs until proven otherwise. And they're motivated this season, which makes them really dangerous.
Yeah, and it's still Andy Reid, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just too many things. And maybe this is the year. It's just I can't make a good case for it. It's been the Chiefs Invitational when it comes to the AFC Championship game. So maybe this is, you know, a different year. I will say the Broncos look good, but I'll believe it when I see it. All right, coming up next, time to switch gears to baseball. Our favorite baseball plays of the day. Come your way next here on the Daily Talk. Today, September 3rd. And in a few minutes, we'll get to our favorite baseball plays on a slate of games that we hope to pick some winners for you, because baseball season is still happening. And I understand the big beef on social media and in the sports world. Yesterday was Dabo Swinney and Brian Kelly. But, Jenks, we had all kinds of drama in the major leagues last night. And I understand it was later, if you go to bed early. But we had two instances. Rafi Devers v. Kyle Freeland. After Rafi Devers stared Kyle Freeland down, or at least he stared down his home run ball, and he was admiring it. He was watching it sail over the fence. And listen, Kyle Freeland did not appreciate that. And I do know this is one of the like unwritten rules of baseball, is that you don't pimp a home run, like especially in a regular season game, and especially the first inning of the game. This was the craziest part. There was this huge fight afterwards that ended in like both sides getting players ejected. Because essentially, Rafi Devers and Kyle Freeland were like screaming at each other to the point where Rafi Devers didn't even round the bases for like 15 minutes. I even had to check the box score. I was like, did they even count this home run? Because I'm not sure if he even went around the base pass. But then the other drama was on the same team, which always makes drama a little bit juicier, because in the Astros game, Framber Valdez gave up a grand slam to Trent Grisham. And he was not super thrilled about that. And apparently there was some mix-up on what pitch he was supposed to throw. And then the next pitch, he threw a pitch that the catcher looked like he was prepared for a curveball. He was setting up on one side. And then Framber Valdez threw a pitch to the other side, and it hit the catcher. So I know this is kind of in the weeds, but it's called getting crossed up. Yeah. And it's not very nice when pitchers do this to catchers. And so people were speculating that there was some type of animosity between Framber Valdez and the catcher for the Astros, to the point where he did this on purpose. Now, here's the tough part, because I am not a huge fan of speculating, because after this game, nobody admitted to this. The catcher said, no, it was a pitchcom miscommunication. It was just really loud, a bunch of Yankees fans there. Framber Valdez did not admit to it. But if you look at their facial expressions, it does feel like something happened. So, again, I'm not a huge fan of speculating, but there was some drama there, I think. But I do respect the Astros for handling this in-house and not allowing, like, the public to get involved. But, ooh, boy, all kinds of drama last night in the majors.
It's Astro on Astro crime. You hate to see it. Yeah, there was definitely something going on. I mean, this is, again, yes, yeah, speculation, but if you look at the reactions, it wasn't like, whoa, that sucked, or miscommunication. It was, dude, like the Astros catcher looking at Valdez like, what are you doing? Like, come on, man. Like, to me, that's what got me. Like, whatever's going on here, I'm not quite sure what it is, but it sure looks like this was intentional. So you're not wrong there. And the Devers thing was crazy, because, again, he got about two steps past first base and it was like, all right, let's go. I think that's what he was yelling, Kyle Freeland. Let's effing go.
I think the craziest part is that usually it takes a while for like tensions to mount throughout a game, where it's like in the sixth or seventh inning.
Yeah.
Like, this was at the first of the game. Like, it's wild to me that Kyle Freeland, like, they had to get another pitcher to start warming up because Kyle Freeland got ejected from the game. So I don't know. I think the simple answer is, hey, Kyle Freeland, maybe stop giving up tape measure home runs if you don't want guys sitting there and admiring balls as they go over the fence. But Rafi Devers, I think he needed a little fire. Because remember, like, some of the, like, I don't want to say, like, narratives, but, like, people were kind of pointing fingers at him back when he was in Boston saying, okay, he's, I don't know. Like, the attitude's not there. And, like, maybe there's some apathy. And maybe he was just over it, because the Red Sox did ask him to change positions, like, multiple times.
Yeah.
But it's good to see the fire back for Rafi Devers, because in there somewhere is a very good player.
Well, I think for me, I'm just happy for Rockies fans. That was probably the most exciting moment of that game. You know what I mean? You knew you were going to get a loss. You're like, oh, my God. Did you see that fight that broke out? Did you see Freeland and Devers? I was there, man. I was there. Got some cheap seats, and then I was able to walk down to, like, the first row because no one was there. I got to see it live. So good for the Rockies and the Rockies fans, because they've had nothing to cheer about this season. Also, I don't get nearly as fired up as a lot of people do when batters admire their home runs. Like, I get it. I understand unwritten rule, all that. But sometimes I feel some of that, or a lot of that, is overblown.
Well, I do think that's going to die out with the next generation. Because, Jenks, I've told you stories about, like, the youth baseball circuit. Oh, right. My goodness. They're doing TikTok dances rounding second base. So,
God bless.
If you liked the respect and the unwritten rules of baseball, just wait about 10 years, and I feel like they will be out the window, and most people will be making social media content as they, you know, bat flip their bat like 10 yards away. So, I don't know if I'm ready for that either. All right, let's turn our attention to the daily baseball slate. And listen, if you're betting on baseball anyway, you might as well do it over at BetMGM with the MLB Parlay Token. Swing big on your next MLB Parlay. Use this Parlay Boost Token to score a bigger payout if your baseball parlay hits over at BetMGM. Just click opt in and you'll be opted in. All right, so we have some daytime baseball. Several games start before the sun sets, which is always a great thing if you want to get on the action early. We have the Marlins Nationals. We have Mets Tigers. We have Rangers Diamondbacks and Orioles Padres, all for the daytime slate. So, Jenks, will you be getting the betting early, going early today? Are you betting on any of these first four games?
Well, I was... How convinced do I sound? Not convinced at all. Yeah, I like the Rangers Diamondbacks over. I was maybe looking at the Marlins just because I like the price fading the Nats. By the way, did you see the picture? Like, I mean, it's been this way for a while. Like that Zoom shot that kind of made the rounds yesterday of Nats Park, like the actual crowd. There might have been like 17 people in attendance.
Yeah, it's classic.
Yeah. Close friend of mine was right behind the catcher. So I guess we... A mutual friend of ours, I was in bed, was watching the game and was taking screen captures of the TV, and our buddy is right behind home plate, like chugging a beer, cheering, just going nuts because no one was there. So those screen captures are hilarious. I mean, there's just no one at Nats Park. And also, it's been a bad year for Mitchell Parker. 7-15, a 5.94 ERA. Yuri Perez got hit around last time out, but I think the Marlins at minus 150, you could probably find it a little bit cheaper if you look around. I don't mind. But the game that I am going to be on, I think, is Rangers D-backs over 9, maybe over 8.5 if you want to. I don't know why I'm like this, but is there ever a player, like I'm talking about Jack Leiter here, going for the Rangers against Zach Gallen. I don't know why I have such an aversion to Jack Leiter, because he's been really good. 2 runs or less in 7 of his last 8. Faced the Diamondbacks on August 12th. 1 run over 5 innings. And yet when I see his name, I'm like, oh, I got to fade him. I don't know why that is. But on the road, I will say this. 3-5, 4.61 ERA. Zach Gallen at home this year. 3-7 ERA over 5. I know the Diamondbacks were sellers at the deadline, but they are still a top 5 team in OPS and slugging. Arizona is an over team when playing Chase Field. I'd go over here.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to go. Like, if you don't want to necessarily fade Jack Leiter, like, you play an over and say, okay, he's going to give up at least a couple of runs. And I will say this about the Diamondbacks. I know it has been a season to forget because of a lot of injuries that they've had, but their lineup is still really good. Like, they have several guys in that lineup that are hitting close to 290. So they are a scrappy team when it comes to scoring runs. When it comes to over-under, though, it's just difficult to peg any of these trends down just because it's pretty much even across the board. Like, their over-under record this year is 68, 66, and 6. So, like, there's nothing that really jumps off the page there. But they are a good hitting lineup. The Rangers are tricky because it's difficult to justify an over with some of their season-long numbers because they have not been a great hitting offense. But during this recent stretch, it has been over central. It should be noted that some of those games were against the A's, who are pretty much an over machine. So I don't know. I think there's too many factors pointing in the wrong directions for me. So I won't be betting on that one, but... Let me ask you about this one, because the Mets have been one of the hotter teams, it feels like. And Clay Holmes going for New York today, 11-6, 3.60 ERA. The Tigers have been scuffling a bit, 4-7 over their last 11 games, and they're underdogs here at home. Casey Mize gets the ball, 12-5, 3.95 ERA. I was looking at the offensive numbers for the Tigers, and I understand they're one of the best teams in the American League, but over the last month, they've been extremely middling, like 14th or worse in most statistical categories. Meanwhile, the Mets have the second best batting average in baseball over the last month. So if you're wondering why the Mets are favored on the road, because I understand they have not been a great road team, that's probably why. But Jenks, now the question is, would you want to play the Mets?
I don't know if I'm going to play them here. Got me a dub last night, so I'll definitely take that. That was an easy winner for you as well. But I think it's a good price on the Mets here. I still get a little worried about the Tigers because they certainly have the potential to pull off an upset, and anytime you can get the Tigers at plus money, it's not a bad bet. But just the way that the Mets are swinging the bats right now, with the way that they've been hitting over the past month, they've kind of gotten away, at least recently, from, you know, that idea that they only hit and only play well at home. I mean, they've been dominating the series, and they were great last night, so I don't mind the Mets at minus 125 at all.
All right, let me ask you about this one, because this was my first impression, Rose, of the day. The Blue Jays on the road at the Reds. Shane Bieber toes the mound for Toronto, and he has not had many games since coming back from the injured list, but both those games have been really good. But the sabotage factor for the Blue Jays is that Jose Berrios only went like 2 2/3 yesterday. They had to use a ton of their bullpen. So I do think if you play the Blue Jays today, maybe only play them in the first five. But I do think Shane Bieber gives them a huge advantage, at least when he's in the game. They're minus 160 on the money line for the full game. I'm trying to check and see what their first five price is. And it is minus 170. Great. Oof. That is a little too high for my liking. So you could play him on the run line, or once they release some of these pitcher props, because BetMGM's kind of behind the curve on some of these pitcher props. Maybe somebody has it available, but I would bank on this. I think Shane Bieber continues to roll. You've got to remember, he is a Cy Young winner. He has great stuff, and I do think he continues to roll here. But the Blue Jays, minus 170 in the first five. Yeah. Did you look at this game at all, Jenks?
I did, but that's exactly the problem I had, which is, okay, I like this, but it's just not, it's just too expensive. Like, we got the Dodgers yesterday. By the way, we lucked out with the Dodgers yesterday in the first five because they were down early on, and they managed to tie that up, and we got a push. But at minus 162 with Clayton Kershaw, that's different going up against the Pirates here. Zach Littell has actually been pretty good this season. I mean, 9-8, 3.63 ERA. So if there were more of a pitching mismatch, then I might be willing to look at, you know, maybe stretching it out in the first five. But I also feel like that the only way to play this is first five run line, and I don't really feel comfortable with that because I think Littell has been that good, and this could be really close. So I'm probably going to pass on this one.
Yeah. Well, if you don't love that one, there are other options on the board today. We do have some good games, Braves and Cubs. This was one of those that I saw, and since, the line has skyrocketed. So last night it was minus 140. I think it's all the way up to minus 157 now at some shops. Cade Horton gets the ball for Chicago. Bryce Elder, who I will say was good last time around against the Phillies, but overall in the season, 5-9 with a 5.85 ERA. Jenks, can I interest you in the Cubs?
You can. I am going to bet on the Cubs today. I just have to look around. I got it this morning at minus 140, so I know by the end of the show it's going to be ridiculous. Which is sometimes why I'll lay the juice on this show. A, you need to have some plus money, obviously. But then B, it's like, well, I got it this morning, but now I can't play all of a sudden because it's 3 hours later. So, yeah, it has skyrocketed. I'm seeing minus 159 right now. I'm going to look around, but I just, look, I think this should be higher. This is a big pitching mismatch, and the Cubs have just been absolutely incredible at Wrigley this season. 43-25 overall at home. So, yeah, it's going to go up. That's okay. I looked at the first five as well. That's going to be even more expensive because I think it's a good spot to fade Bryce Elder. Like, he's been pretty good, but also if you look at who he's been pitching well against, not some great hitting teams. White Sox, Giants, Rangers, Rockies, Cubs are just a different level here. Top 10 in OPS, top 10 in slugging against right-handed pitchers. So I'm going to find a way to play the Cubs.
Find a way, Jenks.
Yeah.
I think that BetMGM might still have a minus 140. Yeah, they
do. That.
So based on that alone, the fact that MGM has it at minus 140 and other places, it's minus 157. if you do like the Cubs, you should probably bet on them now before MGM hears this segment. It's like, maybe we should change that line a little bit. Because the bottom line for me is you have the better starting pitcher with the larger sample size. You have the better offense. You have the better team at home. And the overall, just better team. So the Cubs at a solid price there. I do like that. All right, next up, let's go to this game that I don't think I'm going to be betting on, but I think it's going to be like the game to watch. The Phillies and the Brewers. If you are interested in just watching good baseball, I think that's going to be a good one. Can Aaron Nola put together a good start? He's 3-7 this year, but he has battled some injuries. Coming up next, it's a Wednesday, which means it's time to whine about things. We get paid to complain next on the Daily Tiff, presented by BetMGM. In a few minutes, it's time to complain. For me, that's just about every day, at every time. But we will make a segment out of it, and it's Whine About It Wednesday, where we tell you what's really grinding our gears this week. Jenks, maybe this is probably need to be roped into that, but let me complain about this before we like get to the primary complaint. I feel like Jordan Hudson should not be wearing Bill Belichick's Super Bowl rings. I understand there is a lot to pick on for Jordan Hudson, the 24-year-old girlfriend of current UNC football coach Bill Belichick. Don't know how long that will be his title, but this rubs me in the wrong direction. I feel like if you were not a part of the team, if you did not lend a hand in winning that Super Bowl, you should not be wearing the ring. Am I off base in this?
I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it either. It's less bothersome to me than the fact that she's been hanging out at practices and is on the sideline at the games talking to him. Like, that's what I can't get over. If you've got plenty of Super Bowl rings and you want her to wear one, or she wants to wear one, okay. I don't think she's earned any of that, obviously. But what bothers me even more so is that she's sort of, not even sort of, she's tampering with his process. This is a guy who's known to have this laser focus on winning, and now she's disrupted all of that, and wearing a ring is part of that. But to me, it's her presence everywhere that I think is, at least for me, the bigger issue.
Ooh, I think we're going to go toe-to-toe on this, because I think I'm on the other side. I think, well, you know, I'm going to whine about it. Let's play the sounder. Let's get into it.
Why talk about it when you can whine about it?
Whine, whine, whine.
Here on Whining Wednesday.
Do you want to hear whining?
On the Daily Tip.
All right, so I'm going to get right to it because we were talking about it and you kind of alluded to it. I saw this tweet that a lot of people retweeted of Jordan Hudson on the sideline of UNC's game talking to Bill Belichick. And this aggregator put that this was during the game. Mm-hmm. This was not during the game. If you watch the video, this is during warmups. If this was anybody else, I feel like people wouldn't care. Especially in college games, which, Jenks, I'm sure you've been to a college football game.
Yeah.
They allow a lot of people on the sidelines. It is very different than the NFL. Like, when I covered Auburn football, they had like 50 recruits on the sidelines. They had boosters. They had people who, you know, donate a lot of money. They had like a bunch of people on the sidelines. And we see this all the time with like Colorado football. They have rappers on the sidelines. Texas has Matthew McConaughey on the sidelines. So I feel like people are doing this to pin this on Jordan Hudson. And I am not saying that she is some saint and that she is free from blame in this whole situation. I am just saying I don't appreciate it when people perpetuate false narratives that so clearly within the video are not true. She's not talking to him during the game. You cannot blame the bad tackling on Jordan Hudson. Maybe she just wanted $10 to go to the concession stand. She said, Bill, I want to go get a hot dog. I don't have any money. So I don't know what she was doing, but I feel like we've entered the territory where people are blaming everything on her, and I feel like that is unfair. Like, maybe she is at fault for some of the downfall, but I think it's unfair in general when people blame everything on the significant other. So again, I think maybe she's partly to blame for some of this, but not all of it.
I don't think all of it, but I think to me it's just one piece in a bigger puzzle that we've seen from the start. Like, it's fine, it wasn't during the game, but there's plenty of video where she's at practice walking up to him, talking to him during practice. Why is she doing that? Did Bill Belichick decide to have balloons at his post-game press conference? I bet that was not his idea. Was he the one who decided to let her control who is banned from a certain message board, or that she gets all the social media interactions even though she's not a part of the UNC staff? Like, no. He's allowing it, I suppose, because he's certainly not shutting it down. But I think it's just, it's not that particular incident. It's just another incident where everywhere he goes, she is. And a lot of times she's involved in situations where she really should not be involved. So I don't pin everything on her. But certainly when we've watched this guy throughout his entire career be completely and solely focused on football, 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 no distractions, she has been a distraction from the very start. So I don't think it's a one-off where, hey, you showed up at the game, you screwed this up. No, I think you've been here from the beginning and you've allowed this guy to... He's allowed himself, because of you, to sort of disengage from what has made him successful. And you could already make an argument that the game is sort of starting to pass him by anyway, and this is definitely not helping. So I don't think it's a one-off. I think it's just another example of why things have kind of gone off the rails with Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I do think maybe it plays a small role. But, like, he was losing games with the Patriots before he started dating her. So I don't know if it's all of it, but I just feel like it's a very easy out. Like, you point at her and you're like, oh, she's very unlikable, so let's just blame everything on her. I am just saying, if they have a bad season this year, it's not all on her. Like, some of this is Bill Belichick. He is a grown man, and, you know, he's still going to practice. He still needs to teach guys how to tackle, and you can still have a solid game plan in play. So I don't know. It's just... it's a bad situation all around. And listen, nobody would care about any of this if they were winning. I just think that first game was so embarrassing that people are having trouble looking past it because it has been the biggest story of the offseason. But we'll see how it develops. I don't know if UNC can win some games, but, like, judging on that first game, they're not even going to be competitive. Like, it's not like TCU was, you know, one of the best teams in college football. They are good. But I don't know if this goes in another direction for UNC. I think it's going to be a season of turmoil, at least in the near future. So that's my whine about it Wednesday. All right, Jenks, what are you complaining about today?
We have some new neighbors downstairs, and they need to move that cardboard box. I don't know what they're doing. We have a very small condo building. There are 7 units. And this guy has moved in, and he's got this one cardboard box that is just, like, hanging out in the middle of our foyer. And it's been there for like 2.5 weeks. He's had other boxes delivered. He's taken those boxes in because he just moved in, ordered some things. Like, his whole condo, I guess, is going to be decorated with Temu items. That's apparently what we've seen. So all these boxes are going in, and they're going somewhere except for this one weirdo-shaped box that just continues to sit right outside his door. Take it and put it away. What is it about this one box that has to sit in the foyer that you have to avoid when you walk in or push to the side that he can't get rid of? I don't understand. Get rid of your cardboard box. That's my whine about it Wednesday.
I've got a problem-solving strategy, Jenks. Why don't you move it and put it in the dumpster along with that picture frame of you and Kevin?
Oh, God. Because I'm not doing it for him. I am not setting the standard that he can just put things outside of his door and I'll just take it out for him when all he has to do is take it downstairs.
That sounds like a fun interaction between you and your neighbor when you see him next. It's the worst thing between, like, neighbors, because you will run into them. Like, you'll have to see them. There's some interaction. So good luck with that, Jenks. Doesn't sound fun. All right, Den, you got a whine about it Wednesday today?
Oh, boy, do I. I was hoping you would ask. So I went to a wedding this weekend. It was a beautiful wedding. It was on Sunday, right? So we go up on Sunday. We drive up on Sunday. It's in the greater Philadelphia area. It's probably like 40 minutes away from downtown Philadelphia, but it's in the greater Philadelphia area. So we go up. We have no issues on Sunday. Everything is fine. Everything is good. We are coming back. And, you know, we're taking 95 to, I guess, 276. So it's like the Jersey Turnpike and then 95, and you're going through Baltimore and all these different things. The amount of people that I saw as I was driving back on Labor Day who would miss exits, but then proceed on a major highway and interstate to then back up so they could get to their exit was legitimately appalling. And the first time it happened, it was a massive shoulder, so it made sense. Like, you're not hitting anybody at this point. It was still relatively early. There's not a lot of people going on. It's like, all right, cool. He made a mistake. Whatever. There's a big enough room to where you are not going to disturb any traffic or, you know, potentially injure somebody. The other three times, because I saw this happen four times on a three-hour drive, the other three times, they're literally backing up into the lane. And I'm, like, driving, and my wife is making, she was making me a liquid IV because she's a saint, and I needed it after a wedding. The open bar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she's making me a liquid IV. I had to, like, stop her and slam on the brakes because this dude in a Honda CRV or whoever makes a CRV, I don't really care. I don't drive one of those damn things. But whoever's in this CRV literally has their back two wheels into the lane on 95, and it's a two-lane. Like, I can't really go anywhere. I have to slam the brakes because there's traffic coming on my left side. It was appalling. I don't believe this is a Philadelphia thing in particular, but I already don't like that city, so I'm going to blame it on them almost exclusively. And for that, I hope the Eagles suck this year.
It's not personal, but it's personal. I feel like you should never be using the reverse gear on the interstate unless you're in a Fast and Furious movie, right?
This dude was not built like Vin Diesel, I can tell you that.
It's just, some people have no feel. Like, isn't that what it boils down to in both situations you're talking about? Like, people have no self-awareness. Like, what they're causing to other people, or, you know, what they're doing on the interstate, which obviously the stakes are a little higher because you could get killed. But, like, this is the same deal with, there are people at my gym every single week who talk on speakerphone on the track. So I am listening to Wanda talk to her coworker about God knows what while I'm trying to lock it in. I am listening to music and I hear a conversation over my music. How are some people born with no self-awareness?
It's one of the most absent traits right now in human existence. Like, people just don't see that in empathy. Like, they just have no idea, like, how they sound or that there's other people in the world or in their space besides themselves. Really?
Yeah. Imagine if we all talked on speakerphone on the track. That would be chaos.
Total. Noise, chaos. People just don't think about it. And plus, I don't want to hear your conversation. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear that. Nobody wants to hear that. You know? Get yourself some earbuds. You could, if you've got a phone, if you can spend the money, $1,000, hundreds of dollars on your phone, you can get some earbuds.
Or how about you talk on the phone like a normal human being and put it up to your ear? That's why phones were created. All right. So we're going to put a period on that segment. All right. Next up, it's time to get into some of the drama between college football head coaches. You won't want to miss it. It's next on the Daily Tip presented by BetMGM.